And welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in program. I'm Brian Shields. Earlier this month, the U.S. Senate confirmed Betsy DeVos as the 11th Secretary of Education. Vice President Pence cast the tie-breaking vote to secure the president's pick. The philanthropist and activist from Michigan takes over the leadership and management of a federal bureaucracy with 4,400 employees and a $68 billion budget. Here to discuss the potential changes to the national education system and the issues in New York, Billy Easton and Tim Creamer. Billy Easton is the Executive Director of the Alliance for Quality Education of New York. Tim Creamer, Executive Director of the New York State School Boards Association. The number to call to get in on the conversation is 800-348-2551. It's 800-348-2551. Also, check in with your questions and comments on Facebook at facebook.com/WAMC Radio. Tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop or email Vox Pop at WAMC.org. But again, the phone number, 800-348-2551. Billy Easton, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
And Tim Creamer, always good to see you.
You too, Brian. Thank you.
800-348-2551. Billy, 2006, there was this major court ruling, the Court of Appeals. It's been 11 years since on funding for education. Just briefly give us a brief on that court ruling and where we stand today.
Sure. That's called the Campaign for Fiscal Equity. And the state settled that lawsuit in 2007. The court had ruled that the state was failing in its constitutional obligation to provide students a sound basic education. So the state settled it. They committed to provide a large increase of funding over a four-year period. They did it for 2 years, and then they stopped. And now, 10 years later, the Board of Regents says the schools are owed $4.3 billion still to this day. And we have a problem because the governor's budget not only doesn't fund the money that's owed, but actually would propose to repeal that funding so that it would never be paid.
They stopped because of the recession?
Initially they stopped because of the recession. When Governor Cuomo was elected, he proposed tax cuts in millionaires and billionaires and funding cuts for schools. So I think it was a matter of priorities. And at that point in time, his priorities were not our school children. And really, when it comes down to getting the funding that's necessary to raise the quality of education in poor communities, communities like Schenectady and Albany and Utica and Kingston, Poughkeepsie, where there's a significant amount of poverty, he just never has wanted to provide the funding they need.
If you listen to Governor Cuomo, if he was here, I'm sure he'd say we are spending more on education than ever before. This is the biggest increase in school aid, et cetera. What do you think?
Well, first off, it's far from true that it's the biggest increase. The Governor Spitzer's increases were much larger. But as far as spending more than ever, I mean, you know, I go to the store, I buy a gallon of milk, and I spend more than ever because everything costs more than it used to cost. The bottom line is really what we see in our classrooms. When we see that we have students with 30 kids in their class. We see libraries that have had to shut down part of the week in schools. We see guidance counselors serving up to 800 students apiece. These are clearly signs that there's more money needed. The evidence is very clear. Money makes a huge difference in educational outcomes. The research shows that a sustained 10% increase in funding results in an 11% increase in graduation rates, results in students earning more money through their lives. So it's really about priorities. And the bottom line is when the governor or any other of our elected officials give any of those reasons, they're just giving the excuses for why not to actually fund the schools. And the schools are not funding our schools in poor communities and schools with a lot of Black, Latino, and immigrant students.
800-348-2551, the number to call today. We just heard from Billy Easton of the Alliance for Quality Education. Tim Creamer, Executive Director of the New York State School Boards Association. Tim, the formula is out for the 2% tax cap. It's a little higher than last year, but still under 2%. How are the schools trying to put this budget together with May coming around the corner?
Fourth year where it's been under 2%. Never really has been 2%, yeah. I don't think. And something, in fact, that we would like to see happen. Let's make it a 2%. Across the board, standard, uniform, let's call it 2%. But that is not in the cards as we speak. What are schools boards doing right now? They're putting budgets together in anticipation of state aid being a partner in putting those budgets together. And we don't know how that state aid is going to fare. We do hope for an on-time budget come April 1. We expect that it will be something more than what the governor had proposed. That's been typical. We can predict that usually, but this is a strange time. We find that the Senate, which is led by the Republicans these days, seems to have kind of created a little more distance between themselves and the governor, and maybe are looking at things through a different, more conservative eye. Don't know enough about how the assembly is going to support public education going forward and separate themselves perhaps from the governor's number, to be determined. So we're kind of waiting to see where that ends up and how that money will be distributed. Big issues for us have to do with equity. How is that money to be distributed across all school districts throughout the state?
How much leeway do these school boards have in putting together these budgets? How much of it is mandated? How much flexibility do they have?
Not as much as they used to, and that's just because the resources are tight. You have a limit as to what you're going to get from the state, and you have a very, very hard cap at what you're going to be able to raise locally. And you have costs that are mandated that you're going to have to continue on year after year after year. And in fact, we expect that we need close to $1.4 billion just to maintain current services. And the governor's put forward a budget that a state aid increase of less than $1 billion. It's a good place to start for this governor. I will give him that. I think he deserves credit for coming to the table, putting a significant amount on the table. But we're going to have to do better than that if we're going to make ends meet.
But every May, the pass rate is something like 98%, 99%. So these boards must be doing something, right? And maybe the tax cap is popular.
It's very popular. Yeah. And in fact, if you stay at or below your cap, you're almost guaranteed to pass your budget. But in some districts, that could be as little as $20,000.
Right.
I know I was in a district in the northern part of the state last year. They told me $19,000 was what their tax levy increase was going to generate.
800-348-2551, the number to call today on Vox Pop. It's all about education. 800-348-2551. Betsy DeVos, probably the most controversial of the Trump nominees. Billy Easton, your thoughts on the new Secretary of Education?
Well, I'd say one word. She's scary.
Those two words. But
Well, yeah, I think that there's some very big things to be concerned about. First off, she really has no qualification other than that she's a political donor with an ideological agenda, frankly. So it's not she has no qualification in our public school system. She never sent her kids to public school, never has been involved in as an educator in any way. But her family was the biggest political donor for the Republican Party in the country just a couple years ago. And I think that's a lot of how she got to where she is. The kind of ideological agenda she's pushed is really pretty frightening for our public schools. She's pushed very, she's a big supporter of vouchers or, you know, backdoor vouchers through the form of a tax credit, which means taking money that should go to public schools and giving it to private schools. She said that she would like to see the school system, schools preparing students for the kingdom of God. Mm-hmm. I guess that depends on which God is in your kingdom. But, you know, I think that everybody, that's a personal choice, not something that should be coming from the government. She is someone who has also been in Detroit, in Michigan, where she was very politically active before she came to Washington, D.C. now. She was a big proponent of privately run charter schools and was a big opponent of any accountability for their schools. And as a result, Michigan has what many observers believe is probably the most dysfunctional system of charter schools in the whole country and the lowest performing. That's the legacy she left in Michigan. So I'm not really sure how it's a good thing to put her in charge of federal education policy.
Tim, it seems like they will always be controversial, but it seems like charter schools are here to stay. I don't think they're going anyplace. So how do you make peace with it in public education, or can you?
To be determined. I mean, the real problem has been the funding and this image that they somehow are providing a higher, better form of public education. I don't doubt that there are times when there is a parent who is not satisfied with their traditional public school that they've been assigned in the neighborhood, and they'd like to have an option to go somewhere else. But you want it to be a better option. You want it to be something that's providing a higher level quality of education. And there probably are some charter schools out there that do just that. But some of the ones that Betsy DeVos seems to be supporting are for-profits There are storefront types of schools that are where you would go for a week or two to one school. You don't like it. You move on down the street. You go to another one. That's a real problem. We did a poll with our members prior to her confirmation, and 86% of those people who responded to our poll said that they did not think she was qualified. And we fear that the critics were right, that in fact it's starting to bear out. We have seen her discussions about siphoning off funds for private purposes, for vouchers, for tuition tax credits, for scholarship programs, for private education and parochial education. We have seen that she does not seem to have a clear understanding of what public education is all about. It doesn't seem to be a part of her vision for education at all. It seems to be almost all focusing on private parochial education delivery systems.
800-348-2551. This is Vox Pop. We'll take some calls in a moment.
Support for WAMT comes from Shannon Rose Design, Saratoga Springs, New York, working to help companies and organizations express their identities through corporate branding, web design and development, and graphic design for almost three decades. ShannonRose.com. Union College Concert Series, presenting tenor Mark Padmore with pianist Jonathan Biss, performing a Schubert program, preceded by a lecture with author Jan Swafford, Sunday, March 12th, 3 p.m., UnionCollegeConcerts.org. College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, for over 30 years specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair and 24-hour towing. Full-service gas includes checking of fluids, tire pressure, and window washing. CollegeStreetMotors.com. Saratoga Jewish Community Arts, presenting The Other Son. A young Israeli discovers he was switched at birth with the son of a Palestinian family. March 19th, 7 p.m. at Temple Sinai, 518-584-8730 for reservations. And the Black Sheep, downtown Amherst, a New York-style delicatessen and European-style all-butter-scratch bakery, caterer, and cafe offering fair trade coffee. BlackSheepDeli.com.
800-348-2551. Education the focus today. With us is Billy Easton, Executive Director of the Alliance for Quality Education in New York, and Tim Kramer, Executive Director of the New York State School Boards Association. Your call is always welcome. It's 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Last week, the state comptroller came out with a report, and it surprised me in that he said outside of the capital region, this is just for upstate New York, this report did not look at New York City, but upstate, outside of the capital region, the majority of students are in low-wealth districts. Did that shock any of you? Probably didn't shock either one of you, but it certainly did me.
No, it's not shocking at all. I mean, I think that you see that whether you're talking about rural districts or you're talking about small city districts or you're talking about large cities upstate, most of the districts, there are, you know, some middle-class districts. There's not a lot of wealthy districts upstate, and there are a lot of districts that have low wealth. You know, that there's...
Is this mostly the small towns like in the Mohawk Valley and the Southern Tier, or is it the Rochesters, the Buffaloes, the Syracuse?
Rochester, Buffalo, and Syracuse are three of the poorest cities in the entire country. But, you know, it's Schenectady, it's Utica, but it's also all the rural, most of the rural communities across the state. There's not a lot of wealth. There's a lot of poverty in many communities. It's not unusual outside in upstate New York.
Tim, the average per-student spending was the highest in the mid-Hudson Valley, according to the state controller, $26,600 and change for each student. That sounds like a lot, but how much of that money actually, say, goes to the education? Does that $26,600 pay the janitor as well at the school?
Yeah, it does. It's a lot of money, but remember, in the lower Hudson Valley and certainly out on Long Island, a lot of that is money that is raised locally. They don't get a lot of state dollars.
Yeah.
And in fact, that was, I think, kind of came out of this, is the fact that certainly the local wealth you'll find downstate, but of course they don't get the kind of state aid that some of the districts up north, the northern part of the state get. But it kind of, those of us who deal with this all the time. That didn't come as a surprise. What I did see that I thought was very interesting is that school spending over this 10-year period of time of this study had increased pretty significantly, but when you adjusted it for inflation, it was only 1.4% per year increased spending. That seemed very reasonable. So this idea that somehow schools were overspending, gouging taxpayers, things of that nature that we hear from time to time, I don't think that was true. And I think the comptroller came out, and I'm glad he said that, because coming from him, that means a lot.
You know, Brian, I just wouldn't mind to get in. I would go even a step further than Tim and say it's inadequate. You know, when you the 1.4% annual increases, when you look at the inequities that we have, you know, and you have the big problem in whether it's rural or small cities or large cities, the great need, the 1.4% is not designed to actually raise the quality. And if you're lucky, it's going to help you tread water. But if you're in a district that's kind of already drowning, that's not really good enough. I also want to say one other thing, because this issue about the average spending or the median spending, the comptroller's report was very clear in saying that, in fact, there's a lot of difference in spending between different districts within regions, because the median spending doesn't really tell you about a poor community that's spending way below the median and has much greater need on top of that. So actually, to get the results, they should be spending more. Those are some real issues with how we look at school aid funding in New York State.
800-348-2551. Let's talk to Mike in Glens Falls. Mike?
Hi, thank you very much. What I'm wondering about Mrs. DeVos and her love for charter schools, it's my understanding charter schools can be very selective. They don't have to educate troubled children. They don't have to educate children with special needs. What is your take on that?
Well, this is Tim Creamer. I would tell you that they vary. I do believe that most of them are subject to a lottery system. So there is theoretically some luck of the draw. But the people who enter into that lottery system are people or parents who have selected to participate in that. So I think there's some self-selection process at the very least. And to what extent that is somehow determined after the child's in, are they eligible to stay here? Are they going to be the type of student that we want here? Or are they not going to achieve at the level we would expect? Are they not going to behave themselves properly? I do believe that because they are what they are, they can usually find a way to get students out of their system easier than public schools, as you would expect, traditional public schools. So I think there is definitely a selection strategy that is a part of the charter school delivery system.
Yeah, I would agree. There's a problem with push out, students getting pushed out, and a certain amount of cherry picking that goes on.
What about children with special needs?
Yeah, I think that's, I do think that there are not, as the statistics would suggest to you, that the programs that they offer for students who have special needs are not as extensive as what you would find in a traditional school. And I think there probably are times when parents who come to that school, that charter school, and say, here's our child, is their IEP, here are their special needs, that there is this perhaps private counseling moment that we're not where you want to take this child. We don't offer that kind of service. You're going to want to go elsewhere.
And we've definitely heard that from parents who have had those conversations in charter schools. And I think, you know, if you're asking beyond just the charter schools, where Betsy DeVos will stand on students with special needs, I mean, one of the very scary things, I mean, Donald Trump has said he's going to increase funding for the military by $54 billion. The estimate is that this will require 10% cuts in domestic programs. And one of the largest areas of funding for public schools from the federal government is funding for students with special needs. So I would be very concerned about the direction that may be coming from the Trump administration as it relates to students with special needs.
All right, Mike.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for calling. It's 800-348-2551. A long, long, long time ago when I was in grade school and junior high, I went to Catholic schools, and very often we'd get a student in the middle of the semester, and that student had been asked to leave the public schools. Back then, I guess the place to go was the Catholic school, where discipline was much stricter. Is that still happening, or is it the charter schools sort of where, you know, where are these kids going?
Well, I'm guessing the Catholic schools got their doors wide open because they have had enrollment problems, and they'd probably be willing to take even you,
but
Brian.
Wow, my God.
Yeah, but
they still regret that.
But yeah, but I don't know. I think that's a real case-by-case
situation. But can you expel a kid from public school anymore? They used to be able to back in our day, Tim.
Well, there is a – yes, you can expel somebody, but you really high standard for having done that. And, in fact, there's a lot of emphasis these days in trying to come up with what is called restorative discipline or restorative justice. There are lots and lots of research that shows that pushing that kid out through even a suspension, let alone an expulsion, is not healthy. It's not going to be helpful. It's not going to allow that kid to be rehabilitated and to get back on track.
We have an email. If it costs more to educate a child in New York State than a child in Massachusetts, but Eliza says their outcomes, Massachusetts outcomes, are better. How can we rein in the cost? How can we release the stranglehold NYSET, the New York State United Teachers Union, has in our district? Good and innovative teachers deserve great pay. Weak, do-nothing teachers who are just phoning it in are earning the top dollars in the current system, and our schools suffer. Any comments? It's a pretty strong email.
Well, I think when it comes to the cost in New York State, one of the things that's very distorted in people's sometimes understanding, it has a lot to has to do with how some of our elected officials, like the governor, talk about the issue, is the one of the things that drives up the average cost in New York State is that we have the second largest gap in spending between rich and poor districts. Mm-hmm. So the fact that a wealthy community like Scarsdale or Rye is spending $30,000 or $35,000 per pupil doesn't actually help students in Utica or Schenectady, where there's a huge contrast how much less they're spending. And the districts that need the money are those poor districts. The money that's owed is primarily owed to those poor school districts. So first off, Massachusetts has a much more equitable system of school funding than we have. So if we would invest more in the poor communities, it would improve the quality of education in those schools. So I think that's really the issue I'd like to emphasize here.
Let's talk now to Mike in Greenville. Mike, go ahead.
Yeah, just wondering how you said that the state owes a certain amount of money to the schools. How do we go about getting that?
Sure. Well,
then to pay that.
All right. Well, I'm gonna.
Let me also say that. Then Cuomo turns around and talks about free tuition. And, you know, I see that he drew in Bernie Sanders for, I guess, a photo op on this free tuition thing. So it's just it's hard to understand.
Well, I'm going to address the question of how we go about getting that and how we go about paying for it. One way to get the money is for people to go out and advocate for it. And one thing I want to make an announcement to the listeners here is that on Saturday, March 4th, this Saturday, in seven communities across the state, we're part of organizing marches, People's March for Public People's March for Education Justice. They'll be all across the state. You can get those information on the details at our website, which is aqeny.org. But as far as the other half of your question, which is where can that money come from? A lot of things, just like in each of our homes, a budget is a set of priorities. We all make choices. Are we going to take a vacation or do we need the money to pay our basic bills? And those are the types of choices we all have to make in our lives. The state has options as well. We've seen tax cuts on, frankly, billionaires and bankers in the last 6 years. There are options to restore the rates that existed before Governor Cuomo was in office. That would raise almost $2.5 billion in additional funding annually. There's options to look at some of the hedge fund managers who pay a lower tax rate than you or I on their income, even though they are billionaires, many of them, to tax them in the same tax rate as others on their income. That could generate another $3 billion. There are options that are available for the state, and we should be putting our children first.
Right, exactly.
Well, thank you very much for calling.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. 800-348-2551, an email. Why doesn't the use of vouchers for religious schools violate the First Amendment? The parochial Catholic school, non-voucher, near me requires a baptismal certificate. Do Catholic schools get vouchers?
Well, they don't get vouchers, no. And in fact, here in New York, I don't want to give false hope, but I feel fairly well protected because we do have limitations in our Constitution that would limit the use of public funds for religious purposes. So to what extent a straight voucher, as one might think, I don't know if that's ever going to happen here in our blue state of New York. There are tuition tax credits. There are scholarship programs that are made available to people who write checks to some organization that will turn around and support private and parochial schools. There are ways to funnel money that would be public money for public schools to private interests. And that is something that could easily happen here in New York, and people would line up to do that if we made that available. The laws related to tuition tax credits, there's been legislation that's been proposed several times to make that happen. It has not passed, thankfully, and it has not been proposed in this year's budget by the governor. So I don't want to give anyone false hope, but we're feeling a little bit like the vouchers are probably not an immediate danger here in New York.
We're maybe a little more concerned than Tim about this, but I think Tim makes a lot of good points. And but the way he described how they would do it with the tax credit is the most likely method. But the governor has proposed almost identical type thing multiple times in the last few years. So that's why we have actually shown that that and other issues, the school funding, the charters, why there is actually quite a bit of similarity between Andrew Cuomo in education and Donald Trump in education. They use the same talking points. They have some of the same political donors who back this. And the vouchers or tax credit plan is one of the things that while Cuomo did not propose it this year, he has been a big proponent of it in the past.
Let's go to Niskayuna and James. Go ahead, James.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My call is in regard to charter schools. I've been an educator for many years, and I have no problem with competition. But charter schools are not playing on the same level playing field as public schools are. Number one, charter schools are not required to take special education students. As a matter of fact, if you really do some research, you'll find that the proportion of special education students now that are in the public schools are increasing because that's where they're being sent, is to the public schools. Number two, As far as the charter schools selection process, they have many ways to weed out, quote, students that don't fit our profile, et cetera. And those students end up in the public schools. Number three, as far as removal of students, in the public schools, we go through a very, very long and arduous process to remove a disruptive student or a non-performing student, whatever, from the public school setting. It takes a minimum 2 to 3 quarters before we've exhausted all of the different programs and safety nets, et cetera, that we have in the public schools to keep those kids in the classroom. In a charter school, they're shown the door. And, you know, and like I said, if we had a level playing field, bring on the charter schools. But the problem is that it is not a level playing field. And anyone that says that it is, has no idea what's going on in public education today. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. Any quick comments?
He's right. There are ways in which they can avoid having to deal with some of the things that a traditional public school has to deal with. We have to open the doors to anybody that walks on through, or maybe comes through in a wheelchair. Those are the things that we deal with every single day. And in fact, I think that 95% of the students who attend public schools in New York attend a traditional public school rather than a charter school because parents know that's where the programs are that they need, including parents who have kids with special needs.
Fred and Hurley, go ahead.
Hi, just a quick comment, please, separate from the discussion. For some reason, there's a disparity between the gentleman who was just speaking, the volume, and the other two of you, and I don't know if that's something that you can adjust, but it's hard to hear the other two gentlemen, but the other gentleman comes in clear. Okay. I'm calling regarding The charter school selectivity, it doesn't just affect students. A friend of mine, a teacher, recently was considering working for a charter school, teaching at a charter school, and, you know, and studied the situation and realized that teachers in the charter school system do not have protections. They don't have union protection. You know, you get one student saying one thing, you know, with the right connection, and you're gone. And you know, I mean, charter schools pay their teachers more than public school teachers receive. And so I just wanted to see if you had any thoughts on that.
We are, this is Tim Krieber. I hope you could hear me now. I would tell you that the idea of teacher shortages is one that we are dealing with in school districts across the state. And we're having some very fundamental conversations, with the unions included, about ways in which we could be more accommodating to people who have special skills, providing special incentives, making sure that we recognize performance, things that would attract people to work in this profession, but at the same time still provide them with the due process protections they deserve. It's a real balancing act, it will require us to make some adjustments in our workforce development and the way in which we grow the people who work in our systems. But there are going to need to be some adjustments. The charter schools do not have this figured out. You're in an at-will employee, basically. You have a one-year contract at best, and then you're out the door if anything happens, as you say. And the turnover among the charter schools' staffs is significant.
This is Vox Pop on WAMC. More calls in a moment.
Support for WAMT comes from George Propane, Goshen, Massachusetts. Family-owned and operated for over 75 years, serving Western Massachusetts with propane and full-service heating and plumbing installation, services, and deliveries. GeorgePropane.com. Gazebo, Northampton, Massachusetts. An independent lingerie shop specializing in bra and post-mastectomy fittings, providing support to the Pioneer Valley for almost 40 years. The-gazebo.com. Viva Fresh Pasta. 30 years and 30 wines by the glass, European cuisine infused with flavors of the world, Northampton, Massachusetts. Grab life by the knife and fork, vivafreshpasta.com. And the Discovery Center, presenting March programs featuring guided discovery hikes and exploration into the worlds of native plant gardening and hydrology, albanypinebush.org.
The number is 800-348-2551. Billy Easton, Executive Director of the Alliance for Quality Education. Tim Krieber, Executive Director of the New York State School Boards Association. And we're talking education today on Vox Pop at 800-348-2551. Billy, what is Foundation Aid? We hear a lot about it. What is it? What does it mean? And is that set aside for that 2006 court ruling?
Yeah, the Foundation Aid is a formula. It's designed to distribute money to school districts based on first calculating how much districts actually need to educate the students that they're serving. And that is the outcome of the Campaign for Fiscal Equity lawsuit. So what they do is actually look at how many students you have, what types of needs there are, whether they're English language learners or students in poverty, students with disability, and then what is the local capacity in terms of income and property wealth in a school district to contribute towards their own educational cost, and then the state is supposed to make up the difference. And so it provides much more to poor districts and to wealthy districts. The formula has been in place for 10 years. It could use some adjustments, but the bottom line, the biggest problem with the formula, a lot of people say, oh, does the formula work? The biggest problem with the formula is that they haven't funded it properly since the first 2 years. If they would fund it, our schools would get $4.3 billion from the state, more than they're getting now. Most of this would go to high-need school districts, and we would see tremendous improvements.
Tim, let me throw some gasoline on the fire. A couple of years ago, the debate over standardized testing was huge. It was very angry at times, very bitter. It seems to have died down. Where are we on that in New York?
Well, moratorium is probably the reason why it has died down. There was a commission that was formed by the governor. I happen to be a member of that commission. Right. And we came up with 21 recommendations that was intended to reboot the education reform movement, including the Common Core standards, the curriculum requirements to teach those standards, the testing associated with the standards, and including the teacher evaluation system, which came in at the tail end there. All of that was kind of put onto a moratorium to relook at the standards, retool the curriculum, and give time for professional development, curriculum development, and still administer tests as we're required to do, but the use of those test scores not to be determining whether or not a teacher is going to be performed as to evaluate their performance, and even to use it to not necessarily to use it for students to be moved from grade to grade. We're getting a better feel for how to use this properly. Those tests were never intended to be used for teacher evaluations, and so we're trying to figure this out and do it right. We rushed to judgment the first time. We're taking our time and getting it done right this time.
I just want to add one quick thing on this is while the public debate in Albany has not been as heated, around the state there's still been a huge number of people opting their children out because of the feeling that the students are still having the same experience with the testing, even though getting the testing out of the evaluations is really important educationally.
It reached 20%, didn't it? Then went down very slightly.
I think it stayed the same.
It actually went up one. It went from 20 to 21 this last year.
Wow.
And, you know, not sure what's going to happen this year. I know that the opt-out movement is still alive and well. I believe that there have been things that have been done to attend to some of their concerns. I would tell you they would likely disagree with me, but I do believe in time we're going to try to get this right. Their efforts, coupled with people like myself and people like Commissioner Ilya and others who want to try to get this right for kids and for our school systems.
Let's talk to Lisa in Latham. Lisa, go ahead.
Hi, yes, I'm an ENL teacher, and I just want to, formerly known as ESL, and Students Learning English, and I just want to add to the prior callers to say that charter schools rarely offer ESL services. And so, again, there's not an even playing field, and it's really frustrating when we as teachers see charter schools coming up on top when they're permitted to eradicate whole populations of at-risk students. And again, I agree with the caller who says we're all about competition, but it's not an even playing field. Also, we had kind of a joke in our system. The systems where I worked, we had to keep a seat open for students when they said they were going to a charter school and they had really bad behavior, really poor behavior. We knew they'd be back, and we didn't even, we'd keep a seat open because, again, when a student misbehaves, public schools have little recourse, and charter schools, the door is open, and so they aren't a solution, in my opinion. Also, I know teachers, they get out as soon as they can, as soon as the job opens, where there are job protections and where the pay and work conditions are better.
All right. Lisa, let Tim chime in. Tim?
You know, I'm not really responding to Lisa, but I don't want us to run out of time.
Yeah.
There are a couple issues that we probably should, I'm surprised the callers haven't brought up. The repeal of the protections for transgendered students and the concerns we've got regarding immigration enforcement.
And ESL is English as a second language, correct?
It is, I'm not really talking about that, but I am bringing up a couple subjects that I think you probably want to make sure get into the game here, because the protection for transgender students and protection for students who are undocumented immigrants is very important. And coming back to the DeVos-Trump administration, the pendulum has swung completely in the opposite direction. Under the Obama administration, those protections were put in place. Our state has been completely together on this. The governor, the attorney general, the commissioner of education, the school districts that I represent are together on this, that we need to protect those students and make sure that their rights are upheld.
Do you know of anybody or any school district in New York where an immigration officer came into the office and wanted records on a student Has that happened yet? Because that directive that was sent out yesterday was telling districts how to comply or not comply if immigration came into a district looking for a student's records.
I am personally not aware of that, but the fact that that directive came out, and I think if you were to talk to some school attorneys, they would suggest to you that those calls probably have been made inquiring as to whether or not they can interview a student or whether or not they can have access to those students' records.
Probably in the next month. In the past month, this has been,
that's right,
been increasing. Yeah. Billy, what does it mean for funding? The increase in increase in immigrants, the transgender, what does it mean for the budgets?
I think the transgender issue is a basic human rights issue and for students, and we need to respect everybody and respect all students. The immigration issue, it means yet another issue in New York State that is continues to go unaddressed in terms of funding. You have school districts like Utica where they have it's a small city, 60,000 people. They have over 40 languages spoken in the schools, and they have over 30 English language learners in one classroom. Some of them are refugees who maybe not only have never spoke English, but maybe have never been in a school before, came straight from a refugee camp in another country. This is tremendous demands, and if those school districts that are most likely to have refugees, which are primarily 94% of the refugees in New York State are upstate New York, they are the ones that have also tend to be poor communities to begin with and have greater need. So it's all tied together. These issues all tied together. And frankly, we're talking about them educationally, but actually these are all big political issues. Most of our education decision making is not just what's happening by a teacher in front of the classroom. That is such important work. But so much of it's happening either here in Albany by Governor Cuomo and the state legislature or in Washington, D.C. Now we'll see what the Trump administration and Betsy DeVos do, which is why it's really important. I'm going to give another plug for the march that we're having this week. Weekend, Saturday, in seven cities across the state, throughout your listenership area, there are going to be marches, the People's March for Education Justice. You can get the information on our website, and people need to come out and raise their voice. It's important to call into a format like this. It's also important to come out publicly, march, and make people in a political, our decision makers, hold them accountable.
Brian, I would tell you that, the people I represent, publicly elected school boards, would tell you we would like to have the federal government back off on certain things. You're not helping us with a lot of your mandates. But protections for kids, when it comes to transgendered students, when it comes to immigrant students, when it comes to the civil rights of students, no matter who they are, what color they are, their ethnic background, that's something we do rely on the government. And this president, and I'm assuming his administration, are saying, no, that's all states or that's school districts. Well, there are certain things we'd love to have as a state or school district authority, but there are certain things that should apply federally nationwide.
800-348-2551. Sue's been waiting. Sue in Albany, go ahead.
Hi. I just think it's been implied in what Billy has said and also Tim, but I wanted to point out that the cost of educating students in poverty, who often then also come from trauma, is been shown in research to be sometimes three times the cost of educating a child who is not. So when Billy talks about Scarsdale and Rye, which actually some of those districts have more than just 100% of their foundation aid paid for, where places like Albany, Schenectady, and Troy are at 60%, slightly lower, a little higher, they're not even close to 100% of foundation aid. And the cost of educating students in poverty and trauma, people might want to turn a blind eye to or a deaf ear, but in reality, public education lies at the core of our democracy. And what we've seen in the last election is when there's a lack of education, that it shows up in other ways. Society pays for it through a justice system, by actually a school-to-prison pipeline. It pays for it with an undereducated electorate. So one way or the other, we pay. And if we don't do it for the unionist reasons, we should be doing it for the other. And the last thing I want to point out, Billy, is thank you for mentioning Utica. But right here at home in Albany, we have 56 or 57 languages spoken because we are also a refugee center here in the city district, school district of Albany. And in the last several years, we have absorbed at least 1,000 students who are ENL students. And some of them, you're right, have come from a refugee camp the day before in a foreign land and then come to our shores. And so the failure to understand that extra cost and wraparound services, the kind of social safety net that we are providing to children who don't have food when teachers are actually washing clothes.
Let me have Billy drop in here. Billy?
Sure.
So thank you for doing this program, all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, I mean, look, Albany, that's well documented what Sue just talked about in terms of the additional refugee students in the school that they want to have that's specifically designed to serve new Americans, newcomers, and it all depends whether the state comes through with the funding. It's also important to recognize what she said about the additional cost involved in educating students in poverty. In New Jersey, unlike New York, where we have one of the biggest gaps in spending between rich and poor, in New Jersey they actually spend more on poor kids than they do on middle class and wealthy kids. And the difference in outcomes between New Jersey and New York is really noticeable. There, students in poverty, African-American students, Latino students, English language learners, all outperform their peers in New York because they invest in the students in the poor communities.
Thank you very much for calling. Let's go to Adams, Massachusetts. Jim, go ahead.
Good afternoon, Brian Shields.
Hi.
Good to have you on besides just the news.
Thank you.
And I always greet Ray the same just about. Hey, Ray. Okay. I'm hearing about people on your program now were saying that the charter school teachers are paid usually a little more than in the public schools. And these places are supposedly making profits off of their business services they render in the educational field. Well, how does this funding work out for these charter schools? Are they getting more per pupil than what we allow the public schools to spend? How does this whole thing shake out money-wise?
They vary dramatically, but they get a lot of private dollars. They have a lot of people who are, Billy was referring to hedge funders and people who are investing in charter schools for purposes of making a profit, for purposes of a tax write-off, things of that nature.
Yeah.
So where they might not have a per-pupil funding from the state that is higher than what you might have for a surrounding school district, they have other sources of funding that support them, that allow them to spend, in many cases, more than what a surrounding school district would have. I think they have less costs, by and large, per student, and they are able to pay their teachers more in some cases.
Wow. Very good. Thank you.
Thank you very much for calling. We only have about 2 minutes left. I want to end with Billy and Tim, just giving your thoughts on what you hope to hear tonight from President Trump. I don't know if education will be at the forefront. Probably not. But if you could ask President Trump to say something, Billy, what would it be on education?
I would hope that he would resign. That would be what I'd like to hear, but I don't think that's going to happen. So I don't really have any positive expectations for Donald Trump as far as his education or other policies, to be honest. So instead, I'm going to encourage people, again, come out Saturday, get in the streets, raise your voice about Trump, about Cuomo, about DeVos, and make your voice be heard.
And Tim?
You know, I would love him to recognize that these are students, these kids, they need our help. This is a tough world. He's creating a place where the divisiveness, the danger that it, when he goes after transgendered students and students who are undocumented, he's creating a dangerous environment for these students. I wish he would understand that this is a horrible way for a president to act. He should be representing all Americans, and I would hope that he would come out and recognize that we all are in this together. We need leadership. We don't need somebody to throw the grenade in the room.
Well, we are just about out of time. Billy Easton and Tim Kramer have been our guests. Billy is the executive director of the Alliance for Quality Education of New York. Tim, executive director of the New York State School Boards Association. We welcome. Thank you both for coming in, and we hope to see you again real soon.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
We'd like to thank Billy Easton and Tim Kramer once again for joining us today. Support for WAMC comes from ClipCentric Albany, a local video services division of ClipCentric, producing video advertisements for businesses throughout the Capital Region for web, mobile, and TV. Albany.ClipCentric.com. The Whistling Kettle of Ballston Spa and Troy, introducing purple tea for energy, antioxidants, and mental focus. Available in-store or online, thewhistlingkettle.com. Coldiman Hartman Architects, serving residential and institutional clients with architecture designed for resilience and renewability, designed for the next 100 years, cnharchitects.com. Thanks again for joining us today on Vox Pop, our engineer Zach Malloy. Your calls answered today by Susie Chekai, our producer Jim Lavoulis. I'm Brian Shields in for Alan Chartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.